talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Germ warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm going to be joined by my prepper friend, James Walton, in a moment. But because I always have my show in my Apple calendar, I think Siri has learnt that I do a radio show. And I just got a notification now from Siri asking me if I want to call in to my own show to chat to James. How funny is that? I've never in my life received such a notification. I don't know if that's scary or if that's just funny. Anyway, drop me a mail, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Get yourself into the live chat. It's on TNT's website, which is tntradio.live. I've got it open. Lots of comments. Oh, excuse me. And don't forget to download the TNT app. It's in the App Store, Google, and Apple. Then you can listen to my show. Sorry, let me just quickly drink some water. Hold on 1 second. Sorry, I had something stuck in my throat there. By downloading the TNT app, you can listen to my show whenever you want or any of the other shows. I get a lot of emails, and I really do appreciate them, I promise. I don't read all of them or reply to most of them because, as I just said, I get a lot of emails. The more interesting ones I might reply to. The trolling ones I simply don't even bother with. But my favorite ones are the ones that tell me where people are. Always, always, always tell me where in the world you are. And even in the live chat, let me know where you are messaging from. All right, I think it's time to chat to James. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.
Real political talk.
Party politics is killing our government.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
James Walton, thank you for joining me in the trenches yet again. Siri loves you so much that she's even asking me to phone in now to talk to you.
You should phone in to talk to me. I'm pretty fun to talk to. What's going on, Jeremy? How you been?
I love talking to you. So now that you're back, my day is made.
Glad I could do that for you. Glad I could do that. It's going to be a big day over here in the States. Pre-Thanksgiving holiday madness will abound.
I don't know what that's really all about, living on my side of the pond. Don't you want to just quickly tell me why is it mad?
Oh, why is it crazy? Well, it's just that whole, you know, everything must be perfect, everything must be big, everything must be great, American mentality distilled down into one day, you know, like Christmas. We go crazy. You know what I mean? But really what it is and what it should be about is, you know, the immense gratitude for everything that we have, because it's a good life, you know?
I suppose it is. There was a comment in the news, something about nuclear fallout. I wasn't listening properly, but it was a beautiful segue into something I was wanting to ask you.
Sure. Always such lovely topics, right?
As a thought experiment, how would we prepare for a nuclear fallout?
Okay. Well, we can talk about nuclear fallout for sure. It's a great
or a
topic,
zombie, really. Or a zombie apocalypse. It's the same thing.
It's a great topic because it's largely misunderstood. Now, I have to give this caveat. Everything I've ever learned about surviving nuclear war and nuclear fallout in particular has come from a guy named Dave Jones. We call him the NBC guy, the nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare guy, because that's what he did in the military for 20 years. So he's my swami when it comes to prepping for nuclear war, okay? And nuclear disasters in general, and pandemics and the whole thing. He was a great guy to have on our side in 2022. Let's start with the idea of, let's start out with what nuclear fallout is, right? It's a cool name. It's a video game. It's but basically what it is, particles that get ejected up when you have a detonation of a nuclear blast on the ground, right? Primarily. In the military, they've said that they wouldn't even calculate for fallout if they did what is called an airburst, right? So in other words, if the plan was to detonate a bomb over a major city, you know, somewhere not in the U.S., if we're talking U.S. military, the idea is to blast that thing off in the air, not on the ground, right? Because when you blast in the ground, a lot of your force naturally is going to go, you know, omnidirectional, and a lot of it's going to go into the ground. And that's going to shoot up the dirt. That's going to shoot up the debris. That's going to get radiated and get in the jet stream and travel. That's fallout, right? That's what we worry about when we talk about nuclear fallout. So if you have these sort of particles in the air raining down on you, that can be dangerous, okay? But what Dave said to me is, and his motivation, remember, is, and this is dark, but this is what people in the military have to do. His motivation is, if I'm going to use a nuclear weapon, I want maximum casualties and maximum damage, right? That's what I'm going to calculate for. I want to kill the most people and destroy the most stuff. And the way to do that is to detonate in the air, not in the ground, right? Because then you have the full force of the bomb raining down on that city or whatever the target is. And he said that when we do an airburst, we don't calculate for fallout because there's no fallout to worry about. Because you're not exploding the ground beneath you with such force that it launches things up into the air, into the jet stream. So the first thing to consider with fallout, and we'll talk about it more in detail, but the first thing to consider with fallout is, if you have warring nations who are conducting nuclear warfare, you know, the way that they should be conducting it and want to be conducting it for maximum efficiency, then you're probably not going to have a whole lot of fallout to worry about if they're doing it tactically, in other words, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to shoot this nuclear weapon across at this nation to maximize casualties. If you have people driving terrorist style, you know, rent-a-cars around with nuclear bombs and exploding them on the ground level, that's a serious fallout issue. But then again, things can also go wrong, Jerm, right? An airburst can foul up somehow, and it can become a ground burst, and then you got a fallout cloud that you have to prepare for. And we can talk about how to deal with that too. But just as a basis, that's kind of what fallout is. And it's also pretty undesirable from a nuclear weapon efficiency standpoint.
Okay, but I think the conversation is more about the sort of pretend scenario that there is some disaster that is undesirable, that does occur. And now we need to get into a type of scenario in which we can survive. We can, and, sure. And in order to survive, we have to be prepared for that. We could also parallel that with a zombie apocalypse, because I don't know if you've seen, but on Amazon's terms and conditions, I think it is, they actually have something to do with zombies and what could happen. And I think there was also, someone can go and find it. And I saw it also, I think, and I think it's a joke, obviously.
Oh, but okay.
I think the CIA has it also in one of its, you know, on one of its pages on its website. I remember seeing it. Somebody, I'm sure, will find it. I can't, you know, search for it now. But let's just pretend that this sort of thing is going to happen, either, I don't know, nuclear fallout of some sort that's undesirable, or zombies are coming for us. Now we've got to prepare.
Yeah, sure. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to stay in the fallout frame of mind because it's, sure, you know, we're close, right? We're way closer to fallout problems. You know, the missile that hit in Poland is a huge example of how a military can have a plan that goes awry. You know what I mean? So, like I was saying, even though the desired outcome is no fallout, you could still wind up with a situation like that. I'd like to just direct your listeners who are concerned about nuclear war to nukemap.org. Nukemap.org is a really cool little tool that was created by a graduate student, I want to say. I could be totally wrong about his background, and I apologize. But nukemap.org, have you ever seen it? You ever played with it, Jerm?
No.
It's pretty fun, man. in a dark kind of way. So what
newtonmap.org,
yeah, what new, it's not a game. It's a simulation, basically. What newtonmap.org does allows you to find your spot on the map, like a Google map. You put a pinpoint in wherever you want that pinpoint to be in your location. And then you have a drop-down menu that gives you largely every nuclear weapon that exists on the planet, okay? And you can detonate that weapon on the map, and it will show you the various rings of destruction that will occur and how close or far that weapon will be to you. For example, I live in Richmond, Virginia, which, for those who don't know, is about 2 hours south of D.C. So when I play with the nuke map, I look to see what's the biggest blast potential in the world, and what would it look like if they hit D.C.? Because D.C.'s, you know, target numero uno, right? And then you can see, am I going to get blown up too or not? You can also put, you check the box for fallout, and it'll show you sort of the wind patterns and which way the fallout would go. So it's a little intelligence. It's a little fun. It's something that you can do right off the top if you really are interested in preparing for fallout. You might find you're in the direct path of fallout. You might find that you're not. You know, in my case, fallout travels towards the ocean off the Potomac River, so the likelihood of it becoming south to me is pretty low, you know, if they really demolished D.C. But nukemap.org gives you the ability to do that. You can detonate a bomb right on top of your house and see what that would look like. You would die. Or you can do it at strategic locations around, like if you have a military base on the coast or whatever. But it's a cool little reference, and it taught me a lot about the threat of nuclear weapons. And it gives you that sort of direct look at where the fallout's going to flow. You know what I mean? And anybody can go see it. It doesn't cost any money. It's 100% free. Just go to nukemap.org and play around. It's pretty cool.
Okay. Someone has helped me out here. I was correct. The Amazon terms and conditions does include something to do with a zombie apocalypse. And I was wrong about the CIA. It's actually the CDC. It published, quote, Preparedness 101, Zombie Apocalypse, unquote.
You talking about this link in chat, cdc.gov campaigns?
Yeah.
I gotta look at this. Oh, this is National Preparedness Month from last month? Or last year. This is last year. We always do a big National Preparedness Month thing.
Thank you, Michelle in Florida. She went and looked it up.
Yeah.
And found it. Listen, I'm not going to go to an ad break just yet, but I will in about 2 minutes time. So Whatever you're about to say next, James, keep it succinct. But just quickly,
sure.
I mean, look, when it comes to zombies, having guns, mm-hmm. I suppose, still matters, because you just, you know, as the movies will tell you, you just have to shoot their heads off.
Yeah, I mean, I never met a zombie, so I don't know the best way to dispatch it. I have to imagine.
What? You didn't meet a zombie?
Didn't
you see them all in 2020? There were lots of them around us.
Well, there's one running the nation here in the United States, but I mean, I never met one, you know, one-on-one. So, I guess my biggest concern about firearms in sort of a, we'll call it a WROL situation, is the noise. Mm. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to be letting rounds and rounds and rounds off in a situation without rule of law, because I'd be worried about other people hearing it coming, you know, because people are much more of a problem than zombies, I have to imagine, if we were dealing with something like that.
Well, Jeff says that zombies can't swim, so we will just need to be on a boat. I mean, that's a fair point. The thing is,
I don't know the abilities and strengths and weaknesses too well of zombies.
Well, if you think about it, right? I mean, Jeff's safe. He's in Australia. I mean, it's surrounded by water. So like nobody wants to go to Australia. So they're far away. So they're very safe.
I feel like you could just direct them towards some of like those saltwater crocodiles that you use, I bet, or that you guys have there to deal with in Australia.
I'm not in Australia.
No, I know, but I'm saying for the chap who's talking about Australia, that'd be my mode. I'd say get the saltwater crocs involved because they're voracious. They probably would eat a large chunk of the population of zombies for you.
Okay, James, listen, I quickly have to go to an ad break. I'll be back with you now.
Politically incorrect on TNT Radio.
We've just had a pile of, I'm going to call them vacuous twits in Cairo, postulating on the weather. So I don't know what the outcome of it was, but William, can we have your dissertation on what's been a rather large gab fest on, what is it, the 27th COP or some such thing?
One correction, it's not in Cairo. Oh. It's in Egypt. It's in a resort called, Sham or Shram or something. Sham would be a good name. That's where they held it. Hey, 2 weeks there, all expenses paid. Are you not down with that? I don't think there's a single person there who went there on their own dime. I am sure of that. Okay, there were 32,000 people showed up. Democratic Republic of Congo sent 459 delegates.
Oh, they'd need that many to see if it's hot.
Kenya sent 386.
Good.
African country sent 10,000. Of the biggest 10 delegations, six of them were these African states. They're not paying for those. Their governments aren't even paying for those delegations. Oh, but everyone's getting 2 weeks at this resort on the northern coast of the Red Sea. Must be nice.
Politically incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and lies in American education at salemnow.com.
The common housefly. Caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
James, okay, so if we were not to, let's say, go underground in a bunker, right?
Sure.
This is where prepping comes in. What would be some of the basics required?
So bunker.
Let's say for 4 weeks.
So we're going to hide out in this bunker. Probably one of the most important things you're going to need for 4 weeks is some form of entertainment. Because I think you're going to lose your mind down there in the bunker. The bunker is a scary prospect. But if you've invested the money, they're also tremendously expensive. Have you ever priced bunkers, Jerry?
I haven't.
Man, you know, you can get some pretty, pretty.
I'll have a look on Amazon, 7, see how much they're going for.
They're rough. Yeah. Amazon's a great place. They even know the zombies are coming, I hear. So, you know, it's whether you're going into a fortified bunker or prepping at home, the needs of the human body are the same, right? So you're going to have water enough for 4 weeks, a gallon per person per day, at least for 4 weeks. You're going to have 2,000 calories per person per day and a way to prepare those calories. And you got to be careful about that in a bunker because, you know, it's not a house. You don't have windows. So you can't, when you're cooking down in an enclosed area like that, you could kill everyone by accident. You know what I mean? Just by the use of propane or whatever kind of fuel you're using down there. If you don't have a great, one of the things that people don't focus on that much when it comes to the bunker is the flow of air, right? The inflow and the outflow of fresh air into the bunker. It, number one, has to be enough to keep everyone alive. It has to be filtered, right, from radiation and things like that if you're trying to go down there to escape, you know, some kind of all-out nuclear war. And it also has to be hidden, right? Your inflow and your outflow of air has to be well hidden or people can find it. And if they find it and they know what it is, then they could kill you pretty quickly in your bunker, or they could force you up out of it pretty easily, you know, by just, well, either clogging it or, you know, putting some kind of volatile chemicals into it. So, you know, as far as the preps go, those are the basics, right? You got to make sure you have food, water. You got to make sure you have some way of entertaining everyone. You got to have a real well thought out sanitation plan, Germ. This is a big one. You know, where's all the poop and pee going? You know, you can eat for 4 weeks, but imagine what kind of human waste you're dealing with in 4 weeks in a bunker. You know, you have to have piped in outflow to deal with human waste. Like, there's no other way that you can manage it just in a box. It's going to pile up. It's going to be, you know, a big problem. It's going to just be horrible living down there if you don't have a serious plan for the human waste.
And you'll get sick.
An outflow. Yeah, everybody will die. But you'll have to have a serious outflow plan. And also you'll need that outflow for regular sanitation too. Cleaning your body, cleaning your person, you know, a storm shelter that you go in to weather a tornado or bad storms, way different than a bunker that you're going to live in for 4 weeks. That's, you know, a month. You do a lot of shedding in a month's time. So it's quite involved, man. It's quite involved. I'm not a big fan of the bunker living idea. You know, better to be far away from chaos than to be underneath of it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's obviously just a thought experiment because it's very extreme, but it kind of
acts
as a vector to you know, a very good result. Like, you know, kind of what to do, at least academically. I mean, for example, you would probably want to have the most optimal food. Because you don't want to have food takes up space.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You need high calorie, high protein, that kind of stuff. I assume that if the billionaires go underground, I would be very interested to see this, but because, you know, the billionaires all over this country, at least in the world, they've already built these things. And I'm sure theirs are pretty cool. I would really like to live long enough to see maybe a West Coast United States catastrophe that forces these billionaires into their bunkers. And I'd like to see kind of the horror stories that come out of them, you know, because I do think that that's primarily what will come out of the long-term bunker life.
That is interesting. I wonder how much of that is fiction.
What?
Bunkers, well, the idea that
they're building bunkers?
Yeah.
No, I don't
think they want you to do that.
I don't think it's fiction at all. No, I think it makes perfect sense. I think that if you had, like, we're talking about bunkers that the average person can afford, right? Mm. Well, not even yet. The average person can't afford a bunker, even in America. We're talking about that kind of thing. You scrape together to put something together to try to sustain your family in the worst case scenario. But these guys, with the kind of disposable income they have, I think they would have real systems, real high quality air filtration systems, water filtration systems, outflow, well hidden, you know, really good quality bunkers that can be produced. But I don't think that'd be the problem. I think the problem would be, you know, no sunlight. We are trapped down here. What's going on up there? I think you would slowly start to go nuts. And the people around you would probably drive you crazy too. You know, and then you'd have to, I don't know, what would happen? I always used to make a joke on the podcast, Jerm. I'd say, if a family of four goes into a bunker for 3 months, the only one that comes out at the end of the 3 months is dad. You know what I mean? It's yeah. kind of dark humor, but it's 1-2 rooms max, you and your family, everybody's freaked out. God, I don't know. Seems like a bad scene. But you gotta have the basics down there if you're gonna take it on.
Yeah, I mean, it is the most extreme thought experiment, but you know, it's always something that comes up in Hollywood. So you think, okay, well, let's actually put some thought into this and see how realistic it is.
It'd be tough to pull off. You need a lot of money to do it right, and if not, you could be setting yourself up for hell.
And you need a lot of mental stability too, I think.
Sure. Yeah, you better start meditating like last year. Because you're going to have to spend a lot of time doing that.
Okay, James, I quickly need to do news headlines. I'll be back with you now.
Matt Boyland here with the check of your TNT headlines. NATO's Secretary General has sparked outrage after insisting that stepping up weapons supplies to Ukraine is the only way to end the conflict. New York is threatening to withdraw state funding to schools that refuse to remove their Native American mascots. And Europe's largest nuclear power plant is reportedly at risk of a nuclear accident after coming under renewed fire by Ukrainian forces.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
James, someone in the comments says mental deterioration would be the end of them. I have a feeling that that's probably quite true. I think, you know, when you're in this little sort of cave and you can't get out of it and it's dark and there's stuff going on above you, I reckon that's what gets you in the end. It's what's going on inside your head.
Yeah. Well, you want to hear something crazy? In terms of what's going on in people's heads and how it gets you? We had this theory about suicide in the prepping world. You know, we were talking about managing. Who are we going to have to manage? What are we going to have to deal with if it all comes apart? And we started to figure that a massive chunk of the population, I don't know what percent in general, but a massive chunk of the population would likely kill themselves once they realized it's a wrap. The water's never coming back on. The supermarkets are never going to be full again. The guys with guns in the streets are going to be the new mayor. You know what I mean? And I was looking up the suicide statistics here in the U.S. the other day. 2 days ago, on this sort of concept. I had no idea that 80% of suicides are men. I had no clue. It's a whopping number. But this, you know, suicides have been up for 3-4 years in a row here in the U.S. And I think we're getting a taste of that already. And I think that's kind of what's going on in people's heads. You know, some people are feeling absolutely hopeless that the situation that stands before them. And understandably so, right? I mean, if you have no plan, you had no plan. I can't imagine what I'd be doing right now if I wasn't in this predicament that I'm in as a career. You know, there's a lot for the average person to absorb with everything that's going on in the world. And I think it's starting to have an effect. You know, I really do. In other words, I don't think it's going to be this sort of switch where, oh God, the world has come to an end and I'm going to off myself now because I don't have to deal with it. I think we're kind of feeling the reverberations of all the bad news, the 24/7 news stream of bad news in the suicide statistics already.
When you watch these sort of post-apocalyptic movies, I don't know if you're like me, but I often think, what would actually happen if, let's say, I don't know, like in the movie Armageddon, if a meteor is heading this way and you know it's going to destroy a whole bunch of stuff. Or what's that movie with Will Smith, I Am Legend? Like those sort of thought experiments. And I think, well, one of the things I think does make sense is going up to a higher point. If there's going to be water rising, like in the, I forget which movie it was now, but the water was, you know, covering, I think it was the Day After Tomorrow, I think that was the movie. It makes sense. You want to go to a higher point, number one, and you need to be out of the city, I think.
Agreed. Yeah, you know, those movies, particularly the ones where flooding is involved, they're all good. They're all fun. They all brought me to this point, Jerm, for sure. You know, the Deep Impacts, the Independence Days, all those sort of apocalyptic movies were kind of mutating my brain. I didn't know it at the time. I look back on them, I'm pretty grateful that I was into that kind of stuff. I don't watch as many of them nowadays as I used to, but there's enough, you know, in real life.
But yeah, anyhow, just watch the news.
The Great Flood is real. You know what I mean? The flood is a real thing. The flood is a thing that's going to happen again to this planet. Some people think, you know, there's hosts on my network that think it's going to happen like in 10 years. And I don't know. I don't know enough to know enough if that's true or not. But there's no doubt about it that this planet will flood. It has flooded before. It will flood again. And high ground, buoyancy, that's about all you got. You know what I mean? That's about all you got. And if you're talking about what people will do in a situation like that, your point about being outside of the cities or away from the cities, it's a good one. I think the reality that you experience in a world where everyone realizes it's over in a week or whatever, it will be almost completely determined by who's around you, your location, and who you've chosen to be around. You know what I mean? Like, if you are the only guy on your block that has his head on straight and you don't know anybody in your neighborhood and things go in that direction, man, that's terrifying. You know, you're really at the whims of whatever happens. But if you put yourself in a good position and you know the people around you and you know, those last days, they might not be so bad. I mean, I'm sure you're going to have some people crack up that you're going to have to deal with, but you know, you might see a side of humanity if you're in the right area with the right people that is kind of nice for a change. You know, you might see a lot of gratitude and a lot of humble. You know, there was one scene, Jerm, in a movie that you're going to laugh about that was one of the best. It was a comedy. I can't remember what it was called. It was Steve Carell. And God, I can't remember her name. She's a British actress, tall, big eyes, thin. She played Domino, the mercenary. I can't remember her name. But anyway, it's an apocalypse movie with Steve Carell and her in it. And they kind of meet happenstance. That's what's happening. A meteor's coming. You got X amount of days left to live. And it's kind of this sort of funny romantic comedy around that idea. But there's one scene where they're at the beach and, you know, there's like a day or two left. And I remember watching the parents, the bunches of parents and community at this beach having a good time, family good time. And there's a fire on the beach and there's babies, you know, walking around and laughing and that type of thing. And that, that picture, that scene right there, man, did a lot to affect me more than people running for their lives or being violent. You know what I mean? I thought to myself, that's probably a possibility too in the right circumstances.
I mean, if something like that were to happen, is that what you would do?
You'd have to enjoy yourself, right?
Go out with a bang.
No, I don't know that I'd go out with a bang. I'd be incredibly depressed, but I would have to figure out. I'd have to figure out. Well, I'd want my kids to have a good time. You know what I mean? Because nobody signed up for that. And that's a dark thing. You know, you got this many. This is what you got. You got 7 good years. and now it's over. So let's get around the people we love. Let's eat. Let's, you know, do the things that we love to do, because it's all over. If you're in a situation where there's no stopping, you know?
Look, thankfully, that's not a reality and it's just a thought experiment. but the movies do make you think, don't they? Jeff, what would you do if you knew that there was like a meteor coming and you only had 7 years? Would you try to go find a bunker? Or would you go stand on the beach and watch the sunset? Jeff says he'll go out with a bang.
Here's party, the tempting baby. Part though. Here's the tempting part, Jerm. It was something I was talking about on last week's show. Is it looks like there might have been people who survived one of these floods from way back, you know, 13,000 years ago. Yeah. And they brought, so I don't know where they went, what they did. But the idea is that this Göbekli Tepe location, you know about Göbekli Tepe?
No.
It's a super old structure that is kind of making scientists question how old human civilization is. A lot. I don't want to go into it because I know
you got sorry. Yes, I do know about it. Sorry.
Well, anyway, that site was Stone Age, pre-Neolithic, you know, no farms, nothing like that, hunter-gatherer peoples. And then all of a sudden, something was introduced where they built this crazy structure, started farming the whole nine yards. And a lot of people are like, aliens did it. But I was listening to Graham Hancock talk about it. And he was saying, you know, it's probably that people survived that scenario. There were some sort of preppers or survivors that were traveling around teaching people how to farm and stuff again. And I thought that was an amazing idea. So, you know, James, if you do survive, that's what's possible.
I can tell you right now that you are going to be prepping alongside your dog.
Yeah, I got to get that dog outside. I have too many dogs.
Well, tell you what, let me ask Jeff quickly. Should we maybe go to an early break so that you can sort out your dogs? All right, Jeff says yes. I'll be back with you now.
The midterms, and America has voted. With his expert analysis, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
It used to be said that the Democrat Party was the mommy party, saying yes to everything and handing out the goodies, and that the Republican Party was the daddy party, saying no and being fiscally responsible. Well, those days are long gone because both parties now say yes to everything and hand out the goodies. No, instead what we have is the grown-up party and the toddler temper tantrum party. Republicans, even though I disagree with them on a lot of issues, are the only grown-ups in D.C. Democrats, meanwhile, throw a toddler temper tantrum at the drop of a hat. Whether it's the squad, being oppressed by this or that, the Antifa BLM riots, Russia, 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 Mueller-gate, impeachment 1.0, impeachment 2.0, FISA-gate, Trump's Mar-a-Lago break-in, the J6 sham hearings. Doesn't matter what the issue is, Democrats throw toddler temper tantrums. Well, they need to be treated like toddlers, sent to their room without dessert. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
The news everyone is talking about. TNT Radio, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
James, what sort of dogs do you have?
We used to keep nothing but nice pit bulls, and we recently got a, so I have three of those, and then I have a sort of a pug French bulldog mix, and she is just total chaos. Total energy, total Shame. Chaos. Now, she's really fun. She's a cute little thing, but she...
I think those have to be the ugliest dogs money. Ever.
She's definitely ugly cute. She looks like Stitch from you know, the movie. That reminds me of it as destructive, okay. too.
Yes. Look, I'm not a fan of those dogs. I think they can be cute, I suppose. But no, I've got the wrong dog in my mind, though. The one I'm thinking of is that one that but also has a flat face, I suppose. I really don't like any of those flat face dogs.
She's got a flat face. She's definitely got a flat face, big giant ears. She looks like a bat dog or something. She looks like a frog bat dog all mixed into one.
I'm so sorry to you, James.
Little beast. Yeah, my
what dog
son
have you got,
it.
Jeff? Jeff doesn't have dogs. Oh, okay. Maybe that's a good thing. I'm just trying to think now. In Australia, do they have any dogs that are unique to Australia, Jeff? Do you have dogs there that you don't get anywhere else? I can't.
The Tasmanian tiger.
Is that
it's extinct.
Well, they do have a Tasmanian devil, which is, what is that? It's like a, that's, what is the Tasmanian devil actually? Now I've gone blank. It's like a rodent, isn't it?
They're kind of cute. Some sort of rodent thing. Aren't they? They're like little bears or something they look like.
The first time I ever heard of one of those things was in the Bugs Bunny cartoons when I was young.
Yeah, they're actually pretty cute, the Tasmanian devils.
I also don't think that they spin around in circles like a spinning top. Remember that?
Of course.
Remember
they
that,
do.
that one from the cartoon?
Yeah, Taz was the best. He was great. I had a Taz video game for Sega. It was awesome.
I had that same game.
Did you really?
I did. I remember Sega. God, it was great.
Sega was great.
And then I had a Sega 16-bit, and then I upgraded to a Nintendo 64. Do you remember those days?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I fouled up. Got a PlayStation. I got a Sega Saturn. Yes. It was bad.
But that is now not how you prep, because that doesn't go into the bunker with you.
Well, maybe. I don't know. If you can power it, it'd be good to play some Sonic down there. You'd be bored out of your mind.
Well, you did say entertainment is a requirement.
Sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. You're going to want something to do down there.
Well, that's the thing. I think I remember seeing an experiment with somebody who was put into a soundproof room, and they wanted to see how long he could last in there.
Yeah, I want to do that.
No earphones, nothing. You just had to sit in there. And yeah, I think it was like after a few hours, not even a day, I think, a few hours, he started losing his mind.
Intense silence. Yeah, I imagine. Could be crazy. Silence, but darkness, they all have tremendous effect on you.
I don't think it was dark. I think they had lights in there and they could watch him from outside, but it was so interesting. I mean, just to think about, at least if you're inside a bunker, you've got people around you, but they're also stressing, and that's the problem.
Hopefully you got people around you, but yeah, the stress is going to be there for sure. You're giving up, you know, it's a surrender move, right? You're surrendering everything above ground to whatever the hell is happening above ground. And saying that, ideally we'll go down here and we'll come back up and we'll have to rebuild whatever we lost if this comes to an end, whatever situation it might be, you know?
I was thinking, obviously we've all watched zombie movies, and one of the things that seems to contradict what I said earlier about getting out of the city in a zombie apocalypse, for example, is a lot of the characters, you know, they bunker themselves up in a house and they, you know, close the doors and everything. But there is some sense in that also, because you can move from house to house and you can continue eating the food. Whereas if you're out in the bush, what do you eat?
Yeah, there's good season, there's bad seasons, right? I mean, it's there's some time, you know, summer. Early summer to late fall, maybe, where you could forage and hunt and trap and have some luck if you have skills and you know what you're doing. You're going to be hungry, though, most of the time, I'm sure, because you're going to have to work a lot for it. But, you know, come fall, late fall, winter, all of winter, most of spring, there's nothing out there. You know what I mean? Unless you're you're a good hunter and you're on prolific land, you know, the idea that there's going to be no food on trees or plants in most climates through, you know, winter and early spring. That's why they called it the starving spring. The early parts of spring are the worst, you know, because you've eaten through all your winter stores that you had from the harvest the year before, and you're at the bottom of the barrel. It's too early to grow, and it's too early for anything to be growing that you can eat. That's the toughest time. But yeah, to your point, but in the city, you know, the resources will run out there too. It's not like, you know, unless you have a year's worth of food, but even if you have a year's worth of food, what happens after a year? Right.
I know that you and I are just riffing. We're just having sort of thought experiments kind of based on prepping. And just by extension of that, if there were some great catastrophe, whether it's a nuclear fallout or zombies or a meteor or even just, you know, something that's possible, like, you know, food chain supply shortages and globalism, and we're trying to get away from everything, where do you think in the world, generally speaking, would be the best region to go to? My gut feeling is, number one, try and get closer to the equator, since the seasonal changes are a lot less noticeable.
Yeah, I imagine that staying warm would be nice, or putting yourself in a place where there is plenty of standing wood, right? It's plenty of forest, plenty of trees to bring down for wood. You definitely wouldn't want to be north. You definitely wouldn't want to be where there's, you know, 6-7 months of winter. That would be hell. But I think you'd want some familiarity also. You know, familiarity with the area, with the species in the area, would be a big help. You know, let's say you were in, you know, sort of like the upper southeast in the United States, and then you decided you're going to move to the middle of Florida because it's warmer. You got a lot to learn, you know, just the growing of food in and of itself. You've got a lot to learn. You're going to have several seasons of failure if you're trying to grow a garden in an area that you don't know, particularly if you don't have the internet or books to refer to. So I wouldn't give up the familiarity of a region, or at least give yourself some time to learn that region, because there's a whole, you know, index of wild edible foods, trees that are beneficial, obviously the wildlife itself, all that stuff, you know, the fish, all of it is going to play a role in how you feed yourself. And the more familiar you are with those things, the better. So I'd at least try to stay with that, you know, maybe as far south as you can go so that you don't have to deal with as much winter. But, you know, then again, you know what you have to deal with if you go south? You're in bug world. You know, you may not have to worry about all the firewood, but the summers with mosquitoes and things like that are hellacious. And if you get mosquito borne illnesses in a, you know, collapsed world, you're probably going to die. You know, you're taken out by mosquito.
James, but we all know that Klaus Schwab wants us to eat the bugs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You can collect them up and eat them. they're dying for that. That's why you have to take control of your food production in some way, whichever way you can. You know, that's a pinnacle of self-reliance and independence. You have to take control of some part of your food production, and you have to have outreach to other people and other farmers that are in the same boat as you. You know, I mean, these things are not as cool as firearms and tactical gear and bunkers, but this is what will survive you. You know what I mean? This is what will actually keep you alive, because the world is going in a heinous direction. They want to control everything that you do. And they're gonna, if you allow it. You know what I mean?
But I think that's probably the foundation then of prepping is food. Like the absolute foundation, food, and not just food, but trying to grow as much of it yourself. Like, don't outsource it to companies and people and governments and et cetera. Try and build a network very, very, very close to you with people who can supply you food via growing and their own sort of immediate sources of production.
That's right. Those quarter cows, those half cow purchases that you can make, You know, even if you say to yourself, what am I going to do with a half a pig or a half a cow right now? Just talk to your neighbors and say, look, let's break a whole cow up on our block. The cost of beef is outrageous. We can get it for this much per pound. It's way cheaper than the store. And now you develop two relationships at one time. You develop the relationship with the neighbors, which is critical. And you're developing a relationship with local farmers who are producing food, and maybe Klaus Schwab doesn't have his hands on them just yet, you know?
And another thing you mentioned earlier about books, and it occurred to me that actual physical books are very important.
Oh yeah, you've got to have the, we should probably do a show on that journal one day, the Prepper Library, because there are some books that should be on everybody's shelf, but we need way more than 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure. Sure. We'll do that. But I was making the point that physical books are better than digital books.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, even just mobility and not having to worry about battery power. You know what I mean? Just the idea that, like, if I'm working on something, I can take the book outside. I don't have to worry about sun glare on the screen. You know, the whole thing. But yeah, once the digital realm's over, if it ever is over, everything you have digitally is gone. The only thing you're going to have is what you have in books.
Okay, James, we've got less than 5 minutes. So I'm going to ask you to give me a summary of what do you think we should have with us or should prepare for in an apocalypse?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about this one. So what's happening right now, whether you are aware of it or not, is there's a by any means necessary motivation to save the planet. And the people behind that are powerful. They are integrating into all avenues of business, many that you depend on to get your food, to get your water, to get, you know, all the things that you need. So to survive that, now, I think that probably could be an apocalypse because I don't think they're managing things like energy, food, or water well. And I think that'll continue to be a problem. But to manage that is to, number one, start to live in this mindset of self-reliance and independence. The skill sets that you have, or the skill sets that you need to learn to provide for yourself and your family, should be what you spend your time on. You know, you should be learning just old skills that already exist. You don't have to pave no new roads. Learning how to hunt, learning how to treat sick people, learning how to stop people from bleeding to death, learning how to hunt, fish, forage, garden, farm, animal husbandry, take care of some backyard chickens. Learning the fundamentals of these things they're going to have so much more value to you than buying another gun with another optic or buying a chest rig or a special radio or whatever else you want to buy to prepare for the apocalypse, right? It really is a game of skill sets and a game of self-reliance and independence. So that motivation would be number one on my list. Number two would be this sort of yin and yang of on-grid, off-grid living, right? And the way I look at that is most people don't want to get off grid 100%. They like a hot shower. They like, you know, the benefits. However, you should start building the infrastructure to get off grid or to be partially off grid. You should be able to cook outside without an issue. You should be able to harvest water. You should be able to do a lot of things outside of the grid, even if you're still living on them. That way, if a disaster comes, then you're ready for it in some way. Okay. So short, quick summary, but that's where your mind should be.
Okay. We're almost out of time. James, where can I find you?
You can find me and all the hosts of the Prepper Broadcasting Network at prepperbroadcasting.com. We are a 19 host podcast network, shows on every day, all on the topics of self-reliance and independence. And, we'd love to have you come listen.
As simple as that, James Walton, thank you for joining me in the trenches yet again.
Always a pleasure, Jerm. Thank you for having me.
And I'm going to take you up on that threat of yours. So we're going to chat about, what was it next time you wanted to chat about?
Books.
There we go.
We're going to chat about the Prepper Library.
We're going to do that. Okay. In the meantime, thank you, Jeff, for keeping the show going. Don't forget to email me, joemorphe@tntradio.live. Love to hear from you. Do let me know where in the world you are. Don't forget to download the TNT app from your app store. And that's me. My name is Jerm. This is Jerm Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.